What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is on quite an adventure, but will be returning shortly.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Folks, it is Thursday. If you're hearing this the evening this show publishes, which means it is time for Doc, Matt, and yours truly to present some messages from you. Matt, we got quite a cavalcade here. I think we always walk away wishing we could add a couple of more, but our journey continues. I don't know where would you like to start? I haven't full disclosure, I haven't heard all of these.
Oh, well, many of these are just humorous to me. So maybe let's start there. Let's just get silly. Let's have a silly day this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
This voicemail comes to us from an anonymous human being in Illinois.
Yeah, man. While we're on the way to Illinois, Matt, when's the last time we just did something spontaneous and fun? Other than, you know, in LA recently.
I don't know. We were in Los Angeles, but not on Easter Sunday. We were not there that day. All right, so let's hear from this anonymous so-and-so in Illinois.
Hey, guys. This is Anonymous from the armpit of the United States of America, Central Illinois. It's 11:33, which is a little ominous, but I'm extremely bored, and I just had an epiphany. Luden's cherry cough suppressants from the olden days, the cough drops, the like really good ones, they classify as the world's best candy ever made. Debate me. Oh boy. Lifetime obsession. Lifetime appreciation for all you guys and what you do. So your chosen, God bless, or universe be kind to you and yours for eternity, or until you stop having brain activity. Peace.
There we go.
Anonymous. A couple points on this one, Matt. You know, I no hate to any of the 50 states in this great American experiment, but I will say that I have most often heard not Central Illinois, but Maryland described as the armpit of America. I'm not saying I agree. That's just what I've heard most often.
Interesting. Well, I don't know about that. But what I do know about is the R. Yes, I, Ohio. I've got
Doc,
quite.
Doc's chiming in. Oh man.
Oh Ohio. Yeah. I see you, Doc. Okay. All right. Look, look. I got a lot of family in Ohio. Okay.
So yeah, we don't want to compromise.
Come on now. Ohio's pretty great, especially the Akron State. Area. okay. So Luden's cherry cough suppressants. I have very specific memories of being sick as a child. I was a very sickly boy. I don't know if everybody knows this. A very, very sickly boy. I had one of those machines that helped me breathe because I had asthma. And when I was having trouble breathing or coughing a lot, it's such a specific memory of a Luden's cherry cough drop. And it was like candy. And I loved it. And I always wanted to eat more of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, my parents are like, no. That's not candy. That's a medicine.
I've met your parents and they do sound like they would say that.
They're from Ohio. I don't know if I mentioned that. But it was, I don't know. It's so good. I kind of agree with you, Anonymous Illinoiser. It's like, that's, I don't know. It's amazing candy.
It's always tough to pick the best of something, but I'm right there with you. I remember the same way. It looks like we're both playing those kids in a parable or a drug PSA. I had a Luden's Wild Cherry when I was young, and then as soon as I was able to operate a car, legally or not, I remember thinking, wait, you can just buy these? You don't need a doctor or your parents to get one. And I went overboard, honestly. It was like it was as though I were a chain smoker, but with Luden's throat drops.
Oh.
Which I think they were called, which is also a weird name.
I remember seeing the term cough drops on their packaging. And Doc just chimed in to say 100% used to just eat those.
You get it, Doc. Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
Here's something fascinating that I didn't know until just now. Luden's was created by a gentleman named William H. Luden way back in the 1800s. And guess what they made? Cough suppressants and candy.
Ah, so it turns out, Anonymous in Illinois, you are not deluded. There is, especially in the United Kingdom and in the United States, there is a heck of a Venn diagram between things that are considered candy versus things that are considered medicinal, right? There are quite a few things you can, like, I can't remember where we're talking about this, if it was on this show. You know, a lot of multivitamins. Oh, in our supplements episode, a lot of multivitamins you can eat just like candy because those things are delicious.
Oh, yeah, they are. Oh, my gosh. Also, didn't know this, guys. Frank Zappa. I don't know how we would describe him other than a musician and
up and comer.
Pretty mind blowing in a lot of his concepts and music styles. His music was used in a Luden's cough drops commercial from 1967. That just blew my mind again.
I didn't know that Pfizer bought Luden's at one point in 2006.
No.
Again, medicine and candy.
No.
Matt, I do have an interesting question, I think, for the class here. Fellow conspiracy realist, the best candy is a fascinating question, but I feel it may be a little bit too subjective. So write to us and let us know what the worst candy is.
That's interesting.
Somewhat controversial. It was supposed to be an episode, but we did a somewhat controversial series about this on Ridiculous History because almost no one agrees. They all have some opinions. Like, Matt, do you have a couple of candies that you absolutely loathe or abhor?
I don't know. I think maybe the only one that I won't touch after my son goes trick-or-treating, and no offense out there to anybody who likes these or, you know, to the companies, but...
Sure.
A standard Hershey's milk chocolate bar that is nothing but Hershey's milk chocolate, I will not eat it. I'm not going to do it. I need something with a little more pizzazz going on in your candy. That for some reason, I feel so weird, but American-made milk chocolate has a very specific flavor to me that I'm not into.
Yeah, and it is somewhat unique to the United States, to be honest with you. Like, if you feel that you do not enjoy milk chocolate, try some from another country and see what the hubbub is about. maybe we go, Doc, you're chiming in on the Ludens. Do you have any strong opinions re best or worst candy?
Oh, let's see. We'll give her a second here.
Oh, I didn't see this one coming. Twix is the worst.
Oh, Twix. Have you ever frozen a Twix, Doc? If you have frozen a twist, you would not have that opinion. I'm telling you, it changes the entire caramel game.
Oh, I actually can talk now. No, I have not frozen one because generally speaking, when I don't like something, I don't say, you know, maybe if I try this at a few different temperatures, I'll feel differently about it. Yeah. So no, it's just no.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm just going to request that you give mm-hmm. it a try next Halloween season. Just see what happens.
I love that idea, though, because you can apply that to a lot of things. Like, yeah, I don't usually eat nickels, but I've never put them in a freezer.
Oh, or superheated them.
Or superheated them.
It's crazy.
Can't wait to hear your opinions, folks. Best, worst candies. Where do you fall? And Ludens and Twix. Gosh.
Oh, now, hey. But yeah. Ben, speaking of just candy or maybe junk food,
sure.
I got one more that I think would fit in this segment, if that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to a message from Keith the Plumber. Has an interesting take that I just have never heard this before. So let's go. Oh, and by the way, please don't consume cough drops like they're candy. They're not candy. They have medications in them or some substances that you probably shouldn't OD on.
Right. Again, the Venn diagram of medicine and food also. Shouldn't have to say it.
You're not my supervisor. Right.
If you are about to eat a roll of nickels, just put them down.
Yeah, try not to.
Try not to eat currency. I know it's like a one day at a time thing for a lot of people.
All right. So here we go. This is a message from Keith the Plumber.
Hey, guys. You can call me Keith the Plumber. I was listening to one of your recent episodes and you were asking about fast food conspiracies. I've tried it on myself, and I've talked to a few people, and they've tried it as well. If you eat McDonald's, especially McDonald's breakfast, but any McDonald's, you know, like Big Mac or whatever will work, if you take a nap, you are way more likely to lucid dream. I do it regularly. Now I call my McDonald's naps, and I just have a crazy good time with it. Sometimes it's not so good time, but it works. Check it out. I'll see you guys.
What?
I am so in.
What? Yeah. I'm down. I never eat there, but let's go. I want to try that.
You know, it's interesting there, Keith, the plumber, because there is probably a basis to this. It may not necessarily be tied to the physical ingredients of the food. A huge deal for any lucid dreaming enthusiast, ritualization of experience pre-sleep is a huge, dare I say, ingredient. You can program yourself.
Well, yeah. And I think you combine that, Ben, with the concept of napping, like short bursts of sleep. Because if you can wake yourself up, like sleep and then wake yourself up at an interval that like wakes you up at a specific point in your sleep cycle, you'll at least recall that dream a lot better.
It's like 21 to 23 minute cycles, I think.
Exactly. So like, maybe it's just a quick nap after a bunch of calories, right? Mm-hmm. From McDonald's, a bunch of sugars in all of the stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a sugar nap.
A sugar nap, perhaps. But yeah, we know that you can teach yourself, to your point, Matt, to have lucid dreams. I am going to try this adventure you're describing, Keith, and we'll report back. In the meantime, I have to ask, Matt, do you have lucid dreams on a regular basis or have you ever had one?
Mine are, I wish they were more lucid than they are. I would say mildly affected dreams, dreams that I can have small amounts of influence on, mm-hmm. But very vivid, usually horrifying. It's a lot of fun in this old noggin of mine. And when I say fun, I mean horrifying, but yeah.
You can also reach similar results with just meditation, with deep meditation.
Yeah, I can't do that. For some reason, my brain doesn't do that. But it does go to sleep for these weird little naps and just woo, craziness happens. Do you remember a while back we talked about several companies, like gaming companies? I think it was Microsoft and Xbox. I can't recall exactly, but they were trying to like somehow get advertisements into dreams. They were testing it.
Yes.
Do you remember this? It was a while ago.
It's somewhat redundant at this point to call you a mind reader there, Matt, but I'm thinking particularly of 2021, where advertisers were attempting to sort of intersperse advertising into dreams. There's a great Popular Mechanics article about this by Caroline Delbert. It was, I believe, when we first spoke about it and discovered this, we were talking about the Molson Coors beverage company.
Okay.
They wanted you to dream about beers.
Yes, that's what it was. I remember the conversation now. Oh, wow. Oh, that is so weird. Look for that in the feed if you're interested. That was so weird.
Targeted dream implantation, it's called, or TDI. And people have been trying to do some version of this since way back when people first started peopling, you know, and we know that there are ways to implant certain things in your dreams, because if you are human, the process you experience of dreaming is like a hard drive defragging itself. So you can put certain data in there and it'll run across your sleeping conscious mind. Right. And it's always, you know, it's always, at least to me personally, fascinating the kind of stuff that makes it into a non-lucid dream. You know, there might be, you might have an amazing, terrifying roller coaster of a day, and then you walk through like a gas station and someone says, "Oh, Cheetos." And then you have this in-depth, super vivid dream about Cheetos, and that was the least important thing to your conscious mind at the time. It's crazy. Dreams as the editorial process of the dream sequence is endlessly fascinating. I don't know. Do you think we could implant a dream via stuff they don't want you to know? I bet we could.
Well, I'm going to have a Cheetos dream for sure now. I just had all kinds of weird imagery in my head with the orange powder. Ugh.
That's part of the implantation device is you think of sense memory.
Right? Yeah.
So think of the smell, think of the sound of a bag opening, think of the texture on your fingers, in your mouth, and on your tongue. Well, we just gave people Cheeto dreams.
Oh, yeah. The very specific crunch. Weird. All right. Well, hey, some strange things, some silly things. Let us know what you think about Luden's cherry cough drops.
And Twix.
And Twix. Frozen, not frozen, or good or bad? Best and worst candies?
Yes.
And what is the best food to eat just before a nap to induce a lucid dream? What do you think?
And why is it cheese?
And what kind? All right. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back with more messages from you.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. Matt, we've got a lot of voicemails here because we enacted Operation Scorched Earth earlier. Do we want to round robin an email?
Yeah, that sounds great. Do you want to tell people what Scorched Earth is really quickly?
So we have a totally reasonable term for a thing that you and I do when we want to go through all of the voicemails that we receive, and they add up pretty quickly. So sometimes Matt and I will just hit each other up, often on like a night or a weekend, and say, hey, we're doing it. We're going in. It's Scorched Earth, which means our goal is to go through all of the voicemails, every single message you send us, including when you call and just hang up. Shout out to all the people, by the way, and I'm not even joking. Shout out to everyone who calls in and just says, "Hey guys," and hangs up.
Oh, dude, I have to tell this story. I've got to find it though. Hold on 1 second. I just talked to someone who called in, Calamity Chris, butt dialed us while he was making a purchase at a store and giving out like his loyalty number to the cashier and explaining, mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's actually my mother's number. This is her name. And he's just having a whole conversation.
I'm not stealing her identity. Yeah.
So I just called him and be like, hey, Chris, are you okay? Is everything okay? And he's like, wow. Yeah, I'm fine. But it's weird that my parasocial friends are calling me more often than my actual friends. This is weird.
Chris, we're here for you, bud. We love these messages, really, because again, we maybe don't say it often enough, but this show does not exist without you. So thank you very much for calling, for reaching out on social media. Thank you absolutely for writing these emails. We do love the emails. We read every single one we get, and there is one in particular that stuck out because it hit something that has been on our collective minds for some time. And I don't want to speak for everyone. Definitely for me, the idea of human cloning, what's stopping it? Well, we asked and you responded, especially if your name is GGP Scooch. And we'll explain that at the end. But let me start this way.
Just a little scooch.
Just a little scooch.
Just a little
scooch. Little GGP Scooch. Gents, says Scooch, following a recent discussion you had concerning cloning, I was reminded of a scandal from my graduate school days. Dr. Louis Duval of McGill University in Quebec and Dr. Brenton Riley of the University of Toledo had been partners in research in the late 1960s dealing with cloning. They disagreed over the topic and morals of human cloning, however. With Duval in favor of going forward with cloning and Riley urging caution and Riley agreeing with the majority of scientists and governments that the subject was one to be avoided, this disagreement caused the two men to end their partnership under less than friendly conditions.
And we're going to round robin here, so I'm going to continue on. By the mid-1970s, much progress had been made in mammal cloning theory, and both men had published extensively concerning their views on extending these theories to humans. Duval's position seemed almost militant, and he often hinted that he had experimented far beyond legal and ethical limits imposed by his peers and governments. Specifically, he covertly threatened Riley with some type of retribution for backing out of their cooperative research.
I'm gonna clone you, dog.
Oh, he's like, I already got your DNA. I'm just gonna make another one of you that's gonna repeat your experiments, and we're gonna
might
go
get
forward.
Cloned. Might get cloned. Watch yourself. Scooch didn't write any of that. That's your faithful correspondence. But the message continues. In 1978, Riley began having strange experiences where people claimed to have seen him at places and events he had not been at. Others reported he was leading a secret second life, one where he was frequenting adult establishments, following women with whom he worked at the University of Toledo, and making lewd suggestions through hundreds of sexually explicit telephone calls and messages to close family friends and other out-of-character comments. The stories cost Riley his marriage of 22 years.
What? Okay. Okay. All right. Well, let's keep going here.
Yeah.
We got to go back to that for a while. Here we go. Continuing on with the message. Riley hired an attorney and investigator and discovered Duvall had actually managed to somehow create a full-grown human clone of Riley. Come on now. Hold on. Hold on.
Hold the phone.
The suspected clone was detained by law enforcement following a recorded call from a public phone booth. Riley accidentally came face to face with both Duvall and the clone when he arrived at a courthouse for a hearing on the matter. Enraged, Riley attacked the clone and threw him down a flight of stairs, causing the neck to break and the clone to die. Okay. Okay.
All right. Well, what happened after that? How does the rest of the letter go?
Well, since there had never been rights established for human clones, according to the letter, the only charge against Riley was making an obscene clone fall.
Doc, oh, I need it. I need the rim shot. You had us in the front. Okay, I'm sorry. Says Scooch. By the way, I've been GP Scooch, but probably must surrender that name to my son, who is about to become Grandpa Scooch. That would make me GGP Scooch. I'm not ready for that. Maybe I shall become Paterfamilias or PF Scooch. And not that you would need it, but permissions for everything are again granted. Sorry for a bit of a April Fool's, bit of a Shaggy Dog story, but I got to tell you, Scooch, you had me at the first half, not going to lie.
An obscene clone fall.
And rim shot again. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That was worth it because the way that we handle these things, just so you can see a bit backstage, folks, is when we get those specifics, like we say, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole, we'll do the rest. We're looking into this. And we're not finding these people, you know.
Well, yeah, because you're like, for me, immediately I would have stopped there and I would have begun researching and trying to find, okay, well, where, how do I back this up and like actually be able to say that this is something that was occurring?
Riley and Duvall. Yeah. And the thing is, the structure of this is pretty great because, Scooch, you were careful with the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You had some things in there that looked specific, and we've asked for puns, and by dad, by gum, we got some, and that was a great one. That just made my day.
Oh, that was so much fun. Thank you for that.
So, thank you very much, Scooch. We are going to go to another voicemail. This brought to us by Full Body Taste, who raises some interesting questions. And maybe we can all play along at home and try to suss out whether this part is true.
Full Body Taste.
For the purposes of this message, you can refer to me as Full Body Taste. I just got done reading the 2019 book by author Tom O'Neill, Chaos, the CIA, and Charles Manson. Kind of dives into the Manson family and all this other stuff, and it kind of draws a bunch of conclusions that I think you guys would find interesting. Doesn't definitively say Manson was connected to projects like Operation Chaos or MKUltra, but it does. Tom O'Neill was able to uncover quite a lot of information kind of connecting those two worlds. I thought that was really interesting. Anyway, love your show. Yeah, you feel free to use this message. Sorry I left one where I just swore and hung up.
Did you hear that one, Ben?
Yeah, we set that up a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So we've talked in the past a little bit about the idea that certain violent actors or characters in American history may have been affiliated with, or indeed the consequence of, some various government shenanigans, right? Like Ted Kaczynski, aka the Unabomber, was exposed to some pretty nasty stuff in college. The Charles Manson CIA stuff. Have you ever heard about this, Matt?
I have, actually. I've heard some theoretical connections there where Manson was somehow part of, you know, Mockingbird or some of these other projects, like the early projects that became, what was the LSD experimentation?
MK Ultra.
Yeah. Like he was an early person in that. And, you know, but again, it's all rumor, right? None of those connections have been like fully tied in, I would say.
Right. Officially substantiated.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is something we ran into. And I swear years ago, we were talking about the Manson case. And there's a story that always stood out to me as the group was deteriorating out there in the desert. One of the guys who mitigated the disaster of this cult-like thinking is a very interesting dude. He was a miner, M-I-N-E-R, who was like their closest neighbor. And he was a real spiritual person. I even found his website. I'll have to pull it up later. But he used the same sort of social engineering, Darren Brown-type mentalist tricks that Manson was probably using on his followers, or that cult leaders use on their followers. And I don't know. That always made me think, because there wasn't enough information about that guy. And he's very much a, what do you call it? He's very much like a unexplained cameo in the story. And he does get mentioned in the trials. I think Vincent Bulugosi, who was the lead prosecutor, mentions him in Helter Skelter. But this idea, this reference to Operation Chaos in specific, is very interesting, because Operation Chaos was a real thing. It was a genuine CIA conspiracy to target American citizens. And from what we know as the public, it was extant. It was active from 1967 to 1974. What they were doing was actually a smart thing, or at least a necessary thing. They were looking at all the protest movements, the various civil rights movements, the anti-war movements in particular, and they were asking themselves, is there foreign influence in what appears to be grassroots action?
Is somebody messing with us? Why is all of this happening kind of all at once? I remember having a conversation with my parents just about the like end of the 60s when they were teenagers, and just how weird everything felt. And honestly, it feels quite similar to right now, like an upending of the way people think about institutions, right? And the control mechanisms. I don't know. It's very similar right now, actually.
Yeah. Shout out to the former and active meteorologist, right? That's a joke for like three people. So the idea here, you're right, Matt. The idea here is that through asymmetrical means, a foreign power through the 60s and 70s, it would have been Russia, will conspire to push things. And why is the CIA so worried about this at the time? Because they did this in other countries. Those students, quote unquote, and freedom fighters who just happened to be anti-democratic and far right, they were funded, supplied, and trained by the CIA in multiple countries.
Yep. Look at the student groups that were out in California and Ohio and other places in the 60s. It's really interesting stuff.
Ohio, famously not the armpit of the United States.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm specifically thinking about Kent State University and what went down there, and like SDS and some of the other student activist groups that were interesting stuff. Some early infiltration that occurred in those.
Yes. And that can be proven, right? Also, check out our earlier episode that kind of speaks to this thematically. Did the FBI manufacture terrorists because they found themselves in a dangerously surreal situation where the FBI sent in a mole essentially to a mosque, and with that persona attempted to radicalize people who attended the mosque, and the mosque, which is just composed of normal Americans, right? The mosque freaked out and their leadership contacted the FBI and said, hey, we got a terrorist. Please help us. Isn't that why we pay taxes? And the FBI looked into it and was like,
Yeah, thanks for letting us know.
thanks for letting us know. Swing and a miss. I think there's more to say about this. But before we move on, just what you need to know is that the book Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s by Tom O'Neill proved to be very controversial. We agree with you, Full Body Taste. It does raise a lot of fascinating questions. There are some holes in Helter Skelter. Tom O'Neill is writing in good faith. He spent decades researching these links, and he had a lot of falling out situations with various publishers. It isn't considered officially proven. And honestly, Matt, I don't know. I read the book. I don't know where I fall on it, but I also find it interesting that the CIA made an official response to this. They published the thing. I'm just, before we move on, it might be an episode for a future show, but here is the review by Leslie C. from the CIA. Just going to give you the very first part. Authors or their agents and publishers seem unable to resist using the word secret to modify that apparently pedestrian word history. Its use, meaning secret, promises something the finished work invariably fails to deliver, implying, as it does, access to the eldritch or the Gnostic, when the reality is often more mundane. And it goes on, it attempts to absolutely discredit anything that O'Neill wrote in Operation Chaos. And one of the questions you have to ask, if you like us are on the fence about this kind of narrative, is, why is the company so heated up about this?
Yeah. Oh, they have such a problem. I admit I have not read the book, but I hopefully will. I don't read many books nowadays, but this is one that would actually, I would open it and I would not stop.
You want to do a book club? We'll do a book club episode.
I don't read enough for a book club, but we could, yes. If we'll do one book, we could do one book club.
sorry, Christian Bible. We're going with Operation Chaos. That's the one book we're going to read. So we're going to also, while we are getting a copy of that, we want to hear from you folks. Do you think it is possible that Manson had some ties to the CIA? Would you like us to do a full episode on this? I think we're going to. We just really need your thoughts, your perspective. In the meantime, I'm going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We'll be back with a couple more messages from you.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we've returned, and I guess we should say we are recording this on Wednesday, April 10th. The total solar eclipse, at least for parts of the world, just occurred on April 8th, at least here in North America, when it was crossing over. And there were some weird things. Ben, how did you get to look at it at all or do anything for the eclipse? Any rituals?
It's illegal for you to ask me that.
Ah, dang.
Okay. No, I'm kidding. I was a big fan of it. Had some a lot of contacts out in Texas who were racing to find areas without too much cloud cover. Here in Atlanta, the clouds parted as though by design, just long enough to check out a cool eclipse, and then the fog rolled back in. It's a shout out for one person in the crowd. And
Viking. That was
Yeah. And the rains came. But yeah, I was hanging out on the roof and just vibing, man. What about you?
Sweet. Did you get any of the glasses or any of the things? Like, did you make one of those little box holes?
Yeah, I made a little box.
Pinhole? Yeah. I love that. I ended up ordering a couple of sets of shades, very specific types of shades. Not the ones that were recalled in Illinois, I think. That was where they were messed up. But my son and I and my girlfriend, we all went outside and we were just looking at the eclipse for quite a while. We lit off sparklers, hung out with the dogs, had a good time. And then all of a sudden, there were some weird like health effects that were going on, like some feeling super tired, getting headaches going on.
Specifically?
Well, let's get into this message. And I just want to see if there's any connection here for anybody else who's listening, or if this is psychosomatic or something weird going on because of all the talk about the eclipse running up to it. And I would say all the anxiety that was put out into the world.
I'd like to hear if there are some connections as well.
So let's hear this. This is a message from P-Brain.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Ben and Noel. The codename P-Brain here. I just wanted to bring something up to you all because I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I haven't looked into any of this at all. But I was looking on Instagram today after the eclipse had happened. So it's April 8th or 9th. I can't remember. 8th. So I'm looking on Instagram. My sister-in-law posts a picture of the eclipse with a caption that says, "Anybody else feel heavy headaches and a little nauseous from the eclipse? So many of my girlfriends from work are feeling this way as well." So she works in healthcare, so you think she would know a little better. But I haven't spoken with her about this, by the way. But I don't know if this is like, she's the type of person who believes everything she sees on Facebook type of thing, vaccinations, stuff like that. But I wouldn't put her in the classification as like a QAnoner or anything. But she's not that far down the rabbit hole. But I'm wondering if this is some sort of like placebo effect that people are reading about, and then all of a sudden they're starting to feel this way. So I'm trying to weigh in also to see if other listeners have like any relatives or friends or anybody who has experienced this. Love the show. Take care. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. Right. So I think there's some specificity in this message that maybe is unnecessary. So I don't think it's women, men, anybody else that would be specifically pointed out as having headaches or health problems, whatever it is, after this whole solar eclipse shindig. Mm-hmm. I think it's way more general than that. But I want to talk about it because it's interesting. In my household, two of us experienced a bit of a headache afterwards. And we had very specific glassware on that was supposed to be protective for this activity to actually look at the sun. So we didn't expect that it would have anything to do with that, or at least of the actual act of looking towards the sun, right?
Right.
But it does appear, if you look online, there are a lot of other folks experiencing something like this. So just let's talk about it. What are your initial thoughts, Ben?
Absolutely can happen. The first thing we need to say is that you should not stare at a solar eclipse without protection, without ocular protection, which I think is elementary, but I was surprised to learn as of 2024, about 30% of people in the United States did not know that this could cause permanent eye damage.
Isn't that crazy? I feel like that's a known thing.
Well, eclipses don't happen that often. You know what I mean?
Well, but just the sun in general. It's still the sun.
I hate that thing, man. Yeah. It's just, yes, okay. But long-standing disagreements with the sun. I get it, folks. Don't send the email. I know it's important. I just don't vibe with it personally. But I appreciate its work. The idea, though, here about headaches is a little bit more interesting. So we know it's an established fact that staring at the sun, if you're a human with the unaided eye, can cause permanent damage. But the concept of a headache, it's a little bit different because one of the big intervening variables I think we'll get to is going to be the glasses, right? Or the device you use to view the eclipse. And just because somebody might call something a placebo effect doesn't make it any less real. I would be, if we were medical professionals, one of the things that we would analyze here would not just be the occurrence of temporary headaches, but the length of time that headaches occurred for people. Like how long after viewing the eclipse did the pain in your head persist?
Yeah, I think that's a big deal. Because it could be, there's a specific term for it. I was reading in Time. Solar retinopathy, I think, is the name for it when you're actually experiencing eye damage after looking at the sun. And this is something that is usually not just a headache. It is problems with vision after looking at the sun. So not just like, ow, my head hurts a little bit after that. Or even I have a pounding headache after viewing a solar eclipse. It is I'm having blurred vision or serious spots, you know, in my vision when I'm looking around, and it's accompanied with a headache. What was experienced at my house was just a headache, like a generalized headache, which again, for personal experience for one or two people, it doesn't mean anything, right? Because there are so many variables. One of us could be affected by seasonal allergies, right? Which is causing some kind of a headache. One of us could just have a headache for another reason. One of us could be feeling whatever the effects are and going through some kind of psychosomatic thing.
Even something as simple as mild dehydration can cause a headache, or people suffering from migraines. Light can trigger a migraine reaction. The issue is that headache is such a broad term that there are so many things that could give you a headache. Like if you've ever been on a work Zoom meeting for an hour, that's a headache. You don't need an eclipse for that.
Isn't it crazy? You can get nauseous from just sitting in front of a screen for too long. Like, you know, especially if you've got a fairly large monitor that's putting off a ton of light that's very bright and you're in a darkened room, crap, the way I am right now, you can get eye strain, which causes the same type of headache.
It can also even hack your proprioception, right? So you can.
What does that mean, Ben?
That's, you know, like the game Mirror's Edge, right? Matt, give me the keep going and thumbs up. Okay, so proprioception happens a lot in augmented reality or VR. Proprioception is your body's sense of itself in space. Mm-hmm. And things that give contradicting information about your body's place in space will play all kinds of hazardous tricks with your mind and, again, you know, all your other equipment.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And then imagine you've been, you know, imagining the moon and the sun and where they are in space and where the Earth is in space, and then staring at it for a while and really having that moment where you're like, oh, wow, I'm this tiny little thing on a giant planet, but it is nothing compared to that giant star. And why is the moon that exact size? And oh, God, who am I? Where am I? What am I?
Wow, you sound like I feel like I've had that conversation with a lot of dogs. You know what I mean?
Like, but dude, nothing was said. It was just like, you know, it was known to each other.
Yeah, it was a vibe. there is also another thing here that's happening. P-Brain, the eclipse does have effects on people. That's what we're saying. It very much does. And these effects can differ person to person. Outside of the one universal thing, which is that looking at this, making eye contact with the eclipse will damage your eyes. To be clear, making eye contact with the sun, which is whatever, making eye contact with the sun outside of an eclipse will also damage your eyes because the sun kind of stinks. You just don't feel it while you're staring at an eclipse. So you can expose yourself to that for a longer period of time. As far as headaches, I don't know. You know, it's interesting too, because there are a lot of people who don't wear any kind of spectacles or contacts or corrective lenses. And if you've ever worn, you know, if you got glasses later in life, you may notice that if your prescription is off or just the experience of wearing glasses, it can give you a headache too, because your eyes and your brain are saying, what's going on?
Yeah, it's literally your eyes are straining to see things, and your brain is trying to basically overcompensate for the stuff that you can't see very well, and then the stuff that's too sharp, depending on what your prescription is.
Agreed. Yet we also cannot dismiss the psychological or psychosomatic potential here, because the eclipse took over the news in the United States. And so a lot of people who ordinarily may not have been as apprehensive or anxious about it were starting to think to themselves,
It got to me. I don't know if you could tell. I was mentioning it every conversation we had, because I was like, oh, God, wait, what's going on with CERN? What's NASA doing? Oh, right? No. Yeah. I was reading about indigenous populations and some religious sects that will not look at a solar eclipse. Groups of people who will go inside and make sure all of their doors are locked for the entirety that the moon is passing across the sun like that. But again, for religious reasons often, or traditional reasons. But again, it's like, maybe they know something that I just don't know. Maybe I should stay inside. But then we didn't.
That's an anthropological point, too. Whenever I hear about the practices of ancient civilizations, let me caveat this, the practices of ancient civilizations or cultures that are still around today, I'm going to hear them out. Because they're still around. You know what I mean? They made it somehow.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel fine, though. I think my headache went away. So
yeah,
everything's okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? If the headaches get to us, and if the solar eclipse makes it impossible for us to continue our strange career as podcasters, then you, Doc, and I could try to get some jobs in the military. Right? Is that a good idea?
Oh, we could. Yeah. Let's do this. I was worried we wouldn't have time, but let's hear one last message here from Scoop Murphy. I really like Scoop Murphy's.
Not related to Scooch.
No. Scoop. Like Murphy's got the scoop. I wonder if it had anything to do with Murphy Brown, or I don't know.
I just love Murphy Brown.
I know. Me too. And this person's voice, I don't know why I'm getting journalist vibes from you, Scoop, but that's what I'm getting. So let's hear this message.
You're probably not Candace Bergen.
We hope. Here we go.
Hi, this is Scoop Murphy calling from Etna, Pennsylvania. Hey guys, I just finished listening, as I always do, but I just finished listening to your show dated March 4th. And I wanted to say there was a little bit in there about applying for positions with the government and how someone without a high school diploma could apply. Anyway, bottom line, I used to do a lot of contracting with the government. And what they do when they have a position wired and pinpointed for somebody or a group in particular, that's exactly what they do. They make sure it is so detailed that there are only so many people who are qualified for that position. So I hope that clears it up. But those positions are already earmarked for, let's say, somebody's kid. or a college graduates who are coming through, but they can't really press that forward like that. And by the way, before I hang up, March 4th is what? The most commanding day of the year. Thanks so much for listening. I love you guys. I listen all the time. I don't do music much anymore. I just do your show. Thanks, guys. I love what you do. Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. Scoop. We love you too, Scoop.
You get that, right? Like, you get the March 4th?
Yes. Oh, okay. March 4th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's said in some rousing speech right before a battle, I think. But this is it's just a great point. I don't even know if there's that much to discuss. I haven't applied for any government jobs or military positions, so I don't have the personal experience there with that kind of thing. And I've also, honestly, we have posted several jobs, I think, Ben, or at least had to be in the process of posting a job before as part of our executive producer roles. But like I've never seen it where you make the requirements of the job so specific that only a few individuals could even apply effectively. But I imagine that's a thing.
Yeah, very much so. First off, thank you so much, Scoop Murphy. March 4th as well. One thing that we have to say at the very offset here is that there are hard regulations and laws that require many organizations to publicly put out a job notice, mm-hmm. right? To announce that to theoretically whomever. However, in that same regard, you get to an increasingly rarefied air when you're talking about certain things, right? Like clearances, for instance. You know, or specific types of experience in specific fields to the point where, you know, yeah, you might have to put out this notice for, again, theoretically anybody, but you know good and well, there are less than 100 people who can do this. And you might already know 20 of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're like, these are the 20 people we hope apply, knowing full well that they will.
Yeah. Anybody can apply, but with the correct qualifications. And to be honest, that is not conspiratorial. That is, I guess if you wanted to be kind of a negative Nelson about it, you could say that is leveraging a loophole. But yeah. I feel like it is the best and most responsible way to pursue that thing. Because it's not like for some of those military positions, what are you going to do if some random guy just shows up and it's like, hey, I'm Johnny Blue Jeans?
Yeah, but what if Johnny is amazing at thinking outside of the box about the thing you're trying to get this person to make thoughts about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what if Johnny is just a real dark horse sleeper hit, you know? He's like Twix in a freezer. We forgot he was there.
Yeah, but then you taste, experienced Johnny?
I'm not sure how well the comparison would work. I just wanted one callback. But
Sure. All right. Who was the caller with taste? What was the taste?
Full body taste.
See? Johnny has that full body taste.
Okay, great.
Just like a Twix in the...
There it is. So I'm sure this conversation happens with JSOC all the time. But we also know that we have a lot of veterans in the crowd. We have a lot of people who are active military. We have a lot of people who are, you know, more civilian side, DOD and so on. And you have probably run into exactly what Scoop Murphy is talking about. Matt, I had a friend years ago who used to do background checks when somebody needed security clearance. And to be clear, this was a drinking buddy. So the stories were pretty juicy, even when, you know, even given the way they're locked down with what they can and cannot disclose. And there are a lot of people with, dare I say, the Liam Neeson level set of specific skills. I'm not talking about like any
good at murdering people is what we're saying, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's all we're talking about. Nothing weird. But you know, just to be like a software security person or something, right? There are a lot of hoops you have to jump through because you are taking on a position of responsibility and trust. So I feel like you do have to earmark those military positions. I mean, how nuts would it be if how nuts would it be if the US or indeed any government just came out and said, all right, we need someone who will just maybe if things go wrong, have to hit a red button. And the rest of the time you're going to live under the ground, you know, somewhere in the interior of the country. And we usually have qualifications, but tell you what, just give us your pitch, you know, just film like a 3-minute video of why you're great at pressing buttons.
Amazing.
What could go wrong?
Guarantee you, Johnny has like, it's an art with him with the pushing buttons. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not so much a science. It's an art. And that's why he's really good for this job.
That's why he's so great for this job. You know, it's the new season of America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people from across the country saying, look, I know I don't have all the qualifications, but I got a lot of heart. And yeah, let the audience vote.
Sometimes that's all you need is the heart, you know?
Sometimes that's all you need. And speaking of that, we have to call it an evening tonight, folks. I think we pushed Doc a little too hard on the Twix, so we're going to go make our mea culpas. We will be returning with some more stuff they don't want you to know. Tune in. We've got a little bit of an Epstein update. I think our supplements episode already came out. We might even have a recording of a couple live conversations. We can't wait for you to hear it. We also can't wait for you to be part of the show. We try to be easy to find online at Conspiracy Stuff, at Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. Check out our YouTube. And then, of course, if you want to take a page from the book of Full Body Taste, GGP Scooch, P Brain, Illinois, Anon, Keith the Plumber, or the legendary Scoop Murphy, reach out in Touch Space and give us a call.
Yes, our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Go ahead and put that number in your contact list if you do choose to venture into the depths of voicemail land, because that number might call you back and you never know who it'll be and you never know when or why or how.
You will know neither the time nor the hour.
That's right. But if you do choose to call the number, you will get 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. Please give yourself a cool nickname like all of our callers did today, except for Anonymous in Illinois. Missed out there, Anonymous. We had to make one up for you. We'll make one up for you if we have to. Do let us know if we can use your name and message on the air within that message. And those are the only rules. If you don't want to do that, why not instead shoot us an email?
And we love the email. You can contact us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Give us those extra links. There is no word limit on the emails. We read every single one we get. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. All you have to do is drop us a line and be aware that sometimes the void writes back. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming! And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.